Hey, I understand. That was a lie. I didn't get her cutting at all. She'd done it sporadically, ever since the accident, and it scared me each time. She'd try to explain it to me, how she didn't want to die. She just needed to get it out somehow. She felt so much emotionally, she would say, that a physical outlet, physical pain, was the only way to make the internal pain go away. It was the only way she could control it. "Why is this happening?" she cried into her pillow. "Why am I a freak?" "You aren't a freak. No one else has this happen to them. No one else does magic like I can." "Did you try to do magic?" No answer. "Liz, did you try to heal the rabbit?"
"I reached out, just to see if I could maybe fix it, but there was just too much blood. I couldn't."
"The more she uses it, the worse it'll get. Stop her, Rose." Lissa was right. Moroi magic could conjure fire and water, move rocks and other pieces of earth. But no one could heal or bring animals back from the dead. No one except Ms. Karp. "Stop her before they notice. Before they notice and take her away, too. Get her out of here." I hated carrying this secret, mostly because I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't like feeling powerless. I needed to protect her from this and from herself. And yet, at the same time, I needed to protect her from them, too. "We should go," I said abruptly. "We're going to leave."
"Rose,
it's happening again, and it's worse. Worse than last time."
"You're afraid of the note."
"I'm not afraid of any note. But this place isn't safe." I suddenly longed for Portland again. It might be dirtier and more crowded than the rugged Montana landscape, but at least you knew what to expect. Not like here. Here at the Academy, past and present warred with each other. It might have its beautiful old walls and gardens, but inside, modern things were creeping in. People didn't know how to handle that. It was just like the Moroi themselves. Their archaic royal families still held the power on the surface. But people were growing discontent. Dampires who wanted more to their lives. Moroi, like Christian, who wanted to fight the Strigoi. The royals still clung to their traditions, still touted their power over everyone else, just as the Academy's elaborate iron gates put on a show of tradition and invincibility. And oh, the lies and secrets. They ran through the halls and hid in the corners. Someone here hated Lissa. Someone who was probably smiling right to her face and pretending to be her friend. I couldn't let them destroy her. "You need to get some sleep," I told her.
"I can't sleep."
"Yes, you can. I'm right here. You won't be alone." Anxiety and fear and other troubled emotions coursed through her, but in the end, her body's needs won out. After a while, I saw her eyes close. Her breathing became even, and the bond grew quiet. I watched her sleep, too keyed up with adrenaline to allow myself any rest. I think maybe an hour had passed when the nurse returned and told me I had to leave. "I can't go," I said. "I promised her she wouldn't be alone." The nurse was tall, even for a Moroi, with kind brown eyes.
"She won't be. I'll stay with her."
I regarded her skeptically.
"I promise."
Back in my room, I had my own crash. The fear and excitement had worn me out, too, and for an instant, I wished I could have had a normal life and a normal best friend. Immediately, I cast that thought out. No one was normal, not really. And I never had a better friend than Lissa. But man, it was so hard sometimes. I slept heavily until morning. I went to my first class tentatively, nervous that word about last night had gotten around. As it turned out, people were talking about last night, but their attention was still focused on the queen and the reception. They knew nothing about the rabbit. As hard as it was to believe, I'd nearly forgotten about that other stuff. Still, it suddenly seemed like a small thing compared to someone causing a bloody explosion in Lissa's room. Yet, as the day went on, I noticed something weird. People stopped looking at Lissa so much. They started looking at me. Whatever. Ignoring them, I hunted around and found Lissa finishing up with a feeder. That funny feeling I always got came over me as I watched her mouth work against the feeder's neck, drinking his blood. A trickle of it ran down his throat, standing out against his pale skin. Feeders, though human, were nearly as pale as Moroi from all the blood loss. He didn't seem to notice. He was long gone on the high of the bite. Drowning in jealousy, I decided I needed therapy.
"You okay?"
I asked her later on our way to class. She wore long sleeves, purposefully obscuring her wrists.
"Yeah. I still can't stop thinking about that rabbit. It was so horrible. I keep seeing it in my head. And then, what I did..."
She squeezed her eyes shut just for a moment and then opened them again.
"People are talking about us."
"I know. Ignore them."
"I hate it," she said angrily.
A surge of darkness shot up into her and through the bond. It made me cringe. My best friend was lighthearted and kind. She didn't have feelings like that.
"I hate all the gossip. It's so stupid. How can they all be so shallow?"
"Ignore them," I repeated soothingly. "You were smart not to hang out with them anymore." Ignoring them grew harder and harder, though. The whispers and looks increased. In animal behavior, it became so bad I couldn't even concentrate on my now favorite subject. Ms. Meissner had started talking about evolution and survival of the fittest, and how animals sought mates with good genes. It fascinated me, but even she had a hard time staying on task, since she had to keep yelling at people to quiet down and pay attention. "Something's going on," I told Lissa between classes. "I don't know what, but they're all over something new."
"Something else? Other than the queen hating me? What more could there be?"
"I wish I knew." Things finally came to a head in our last class of the day, Slavic art. It started when a guy I barely knew made a very explicit and nearly obscene suggestion to me while we all worked on individual projects. I replied in kind, letting him know exactly what he could do with his request. He only laughed.
"Come on, Rose, I bleed for you."
Loud giggles ensued, and Mia cut us a taunting look.
"Wait, it's Rose who does the bleeding, right?"
More laughter. Understanding slapped me in the face. I jerked Lissa away.
"They know."
"Know what?"
"About us. About how you...
you know...
how I fed you while we were gone." She gaped.
"How?
How do you think? Your friend, Christian?"
"No,"
she said adamantly.
"He wouldn't have..."
"Who else knew?" Faith in Christian flashed in her eyes and in our bond. But she didn't know what I knew. She didn't know how I'd bitched him out last night, how I'd made him think she hated him. The guy was unstable. Spreading our biggest secret, well, one of them, would be an adequate revenge. Maybe he'd killed the rabbit, too. After all, it had died only a couple of hours after I'd told him off. Not waiting around to hear her protests, I stalked off to the other side of the room, where Christian was working by himself, as usual. Lissa followed in my wake, not caring if people saw us. I leaned across the table toward him, putting my face inches from his.
"I'm going to kill you."
His eyes darted to Lissa, the faintest glimmer of longing in them, and then a scowl spread over his face.
"Why? Is it like guardian extra credit?"
"Stop with the attitude," I warned, pitching my voice low.
"You told. You told how Lissa had to feed off me."
"Tell her," said Lissa desperately. "Tell her she's wrong."
Christian dragged his eyes from me to her, and as they regarded each other, I felt such a powerful wave of attraction, it was a wonder it didn't knock me over. Her heart was in her eyes. It was obvious to me that he felt the same way about her, but she couldn't see it, particularly since he was still glaring at her.
"You can stop it, you know," he said. "You don't have to pretend anymore."
Lissa's giddy attraction vanished,
replaced by hurt and shock over his tone.
I... what? Pretend what?
You know what. Just stop. Stop with the act. Lissa stared at him, her eyes wide and wounded. She had no clue I'd gone off on him last night. She had no clue that he believed she hated him. Get over feeling sorry for yourself and tell us what's going on, I snapped at him. Did you or didn't you tell them? He fixed me with a defiant look.
No, I didn't.
I don't believe you.
I do, said Lissa.
I know. It's impossible to believe a freak like me could keep his mouth shut, especially since neither of you can. But I have better things to do than spread stupid rumors. You want someone to blame? Blame your golden boy over there. I followed his gaze to where Jesse was laughing about something with that idiot Ralph.
Jesse doesn't know, said Lissa defiantly.
Christian's eyes were glued to me.
He does, though. Doesn't he, Rose? He knows.
My stomach sank out of me. Yes, Jesse did know. He'd figured it out that night in the lounge.
I didn't think he'd tell.
He was too afraid of Dimitri.
You told him?
Exclaimed Lissa.
No, he guessed.
I was starting to feel sick.
He apparently did more than guess, muttered Christian.
I turned on him. What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, you don't know.
I swear to God, Christian, I'm going to break your neck after class.
Man, you really are unstable.
He said it almost happily, but his next words were more serious. He still wore that sneer, still glowed with anger, but when he spoke, I could hear the faintest uneasiness in his voice.
He sort of elaborated on what was in your note, got into a little more detail.
Oh, I get it. He said we had sex. I didn't need to mince words. Christian nodded, so. Jesse was trying to boost his own reputation. Okay, that I could deal with. Not like my reputation was that stellar to begin with. Everyone already believed I had sex all the time.
And, Ralph, too, that you and he...
Ralph? No amount of alcohol or any illegal substance would make me touch him. What? That I had sex with Ralph, too? Christian nodded. That asshole! I'm going to...
There's more.
How? Did I sleep with the basketball team?
He said... They both said you let them... Well... You let them drink your blood.
That stopped even me. Drinking blood during sex. The dirtiest of the dirty. Sleazy. Beyond being easy or a slut. A gazillion times worse than Lissa drinking from me for survival. Blood whore territory.
That's crazy, Lissa cried. Rose would never... Rose?
But I wasn't listening anymore. I was in my own world, a world that took me across the classroom to where Jesse and Ralph sat. They both looked up, faces half smug and half nervous, if I had to guess. Not unexpected, since they were both lying through their teeth. The entire class came to a standstill. Apparently, they'd been expecting some type of showdown. My unstable reputation in action. "What the hell do you think you're doing?" I asked in a low, dangerous voice. Jesse's nervous look turned to one of terror. He might have been taller than me, but we both knew who would win if I turned violent. Ralph, however, gave me a cocky smile.
"We didn't do anything you didn't want us to do."
His smile turned cruel.
"And don't even think about laying a hand on us. You start a fight, and Kirova'll kick you out to go live with the other blood whores."
The rest of the students were holding their breaths, waiting to see what we'd do. I don't know how Mr. Nagy could have been oblivious to the drama occurring in his class. I wanted to punch both of them, hit them so hard that it'd make Dimitri's brawl with Jesse look like a pat on the back. I wanted to wipe that smirk off Ralph's face. But, asshole or not, he was right.
If I touched them, Kurova would expel me in the blink of an eye. And if I got kicked out, Lissa would be alone. Taking a deep breath, I made one of the hardest decisions of my life. I walked away. The rest of the day was miserable. In backing down from the fight, I opened myself up to mockery from everyone else. The rumors and whispers grew louder. People stared at me openly. People laughed. Lissa kept trying to talk to me, to console me, but I ignored even her. I went through the rest of my classes like a zombie, and then I headed off to practice with Dimitri as fast as I could. He gave me a puzzled look but didn't ask any questions. Alone in my room later on, I cried for the first time in years. Once I got that out of my system, I was about to put on my pajamas when I heard a knock at my door. Dimitri. He studied my face and then glanced away, obviously aware I'd been crying. I could tell, too, that the rumors had finally reached him. He knew.
Are you okay?
It doesn't matter if I am, remember? I looked up at him. Is Lissa okay? This'll be hard on her. A funny look crossed his face. I think it astonished him that I'd still be worried about her at a time like this. He beckoned me to follow and led me out to a back stairwell, one that usually stayed locked to students. But it was open tonight, and he gestured me outside.
5 minutes, he warned.
More curious than ever, I stepped outside. Lissa stood there. I should have sensed she was close, but my out-of-control feelings had obscured hers. Without a word, she put her arms around me and held me for several moments. I had to hold back more tears. We broke apart. She looked at me with calm, level eyes.
I'm sorry, she said.
Not your fault. It'll pass. She clearly doubted that. So did I.
It is my fault, she said. She did it to get back at me.
She?
Mia. Jesse and Ralph aren't smart enough to think of something like that on their own. You said it yourself. Jesse was too scared of Dimitri to talk much about what happened. And why wait until now? It happened a while ago. If he'd wanted to spread stuff around, he would have done it back then. Mia's doing this as retaliation for you talking about her parents. I don't know how she managed it, but she's the one who got them to say those things. In my gut, I realized Lissa was right. Jesse and Ralph were the tools. Mia had been the mastermind. Nothing to be done now, I sighed.
Rose?
Forget it, Liss. It's done, okay? She studied me quietly for a few seconds.
I haven't seen you cry in a long time.
I wasn't crying. A feeling of heartache and sympathy beat through to me from the bond.
She can't do this to you, she argued.
I laughed bitterly, half surprised at my own hopelessness. She already did. She said she'd get back at me, that I wouldn't be able to protect you. She did it. When I go back to classes, a sickening feeling settled in my stomach. I thought about the friends and respect I'd managed to eke out, despite our low profile. That would be gone. You couldn't come back from something like this. Not among the Moroi. Once a blood whore, always a blood whore. What made it worse was that some dark, secret part of me did like being bitten.
You shouldn't have to keep protecting me, she said.
I laughed. That's my job. I'm going to be your guardian.
I know, but I meant like this. You shouldn't suffer because of me. You shouldn't always have to look after me. And yet, you always do. You got me out of here. You took care of everything when we were on our own. Even since coming back. You've always been the one who does all the work. Every time I break down, like last night, you're always there. Me, I'm weak. I'm not like you.
I shook my head. That doesn't matter. It's what I do. I don't mind.
Yeah, but look what happened. I'm the one she really has a grudge against, even though I still don't know why. Whatever. It's going to stop. I'm going to protect you from now on.
There was a determination in her expression, a wonderful confidence radiating off of her that reminded me of the Lissa I'd known before the accident. At the same time,
I could feel something else in her. Something darker. A sense of deeply buried anger. I'd seen this side of her before, too, and I didn't like it. I didn't want her tapping into it. I just wanted her to be safe. Lissa, you can't protect me.
I can, she said fiercely. There's one thing Mia wants more than to destroy you and me. She wants to be accepted. She wants to hang out with the royals and feel like she's one of them. I can take that away from her, she smiled. I can turn them against her.
How?
By telling them.
Her eyes flashed. My mind was moving too slowly tonight. It took me a while to catch on. Liz, no. You can't use compulsion, not around here.
I might as well get some use out of these stupid powers.
The more she uses it, the worse it'll get. Stop her, Rose. Stop her before they notice. Before they notice and take her away, too. Get her out of here. Liz, if you get caught... Dimitri stuck his head out.
You've got to get back inside, Rose, before someone finds you.
I shot a panicked look at Lissa, but she was already retreating.
I'll take care of everything this time, Rose. Everything.
Chapter 13. The aftermath of Jesse and Ralph's lies was about as horrible as I'd expected. The only way I survived was by putting blinders on, by ignoring everyone and everything. It kept me sane, barely, but I hated it. I felt like crying all the time. I lost my appetite and didn't sleep well. Yet, no matter how bad it got for me, I didn't worry about myself as much as I did Lissa. She stood by her promise to change things. It was slow at first, but gradually I would see a royal or two come up to her at lunch or in class and say hello. She'd turn on a brilliant smile, laughing and talking to them like they were all best friends. At first, I didn't understand how she was pulling it off. She'd told me she would use compulsion to win the other royals over and to turn them against Mia. But I didn't see it happening. It was possible, of course, that she was winning people over without compulsion. After all, she was funny, smart, and nice. Anyone would like her. Something told me she wasn't winning friends the old-fashioned way, and I finally figured it out. She was using compulsion when I wasn't around. I only saw her for a small part of the day, and since she knew I didn't approve, she only worked her power when I was away. After a few days of this secret compulsion, I knew what I needed to do. I had to get back in her head again, by choice. I'd done it before. I could do it again. At least that's what I told myself, sitting and spacing out in Stan's class one day. But it wasn't as easy as I thought it would be, partly because I felt too keyed up to relax and open myself to her thoughts. I also had trouble because I picked a time when she felt relatively calm. She came through the loudest when her emotions were running strong. Still, I tried to do what I'd done before, back when I'd spied on her and Christian. The meditation thing. Slow breathing, eyes closed. Mental focus like that still wasn't easy for me, but at long last I managed the transition, slipping into her head and experiencing the world as hers. She stood in her American Lit class during project work time, but, like most of the students, she wasn't working. She and Camille Conta leaned against a wall on the far side of the room, talking in hushed voices.
"It's gross," said Camille firmly,
a frown crossing her pretty face. She had on a blue skirt made of velvet-like fabric, short enough to show off her long legs and possibly raise eyes about the dress code.
"If you guys were doing it, I'm not surprised she got addicted and did it with Jesse." "She didn't do it with Jesse," insisted Lissa. "And it's not like we had sex. We just didn't have any feeders, that's all."
Lissa focused her full attention on Camille and smiled.
"It's no big deal. Everyone's overreacting."
Camille looked like she seriously doubted this. And then, the more she stared at Lissa, the more unfocused her eyes became. A blank look fell over her.
"Right?" asked Lissa, voice like silk. "It's not a big deal.
The frown returned. Camille tried to shake the compulsion. The fact that it had even gotten this far was incredible. As Christian had observed, using it on Moroi was unheard of. Camille, although strong-willed, lost the battle.
"Yeah," she said slowly. "It's really not that big of a deal. And Jesse's lying."
She nodded.
"Definitely lying."
A mental strain burned inside of Lissa as she held onto the compulsion. It took a lot of effort, and she wasn't finished.
"What are you guys doing tonight?" "Carly and I are going to study for Matheson's test in her room." "Invite me."
Camille thought about it.
"Hey, you want to study with us?"
"Sure,"
said Lissa, smiling at her. Camille smiled back. Lissa dropped the compulsion, and a wave of dizziness swept over her. She felt weak. Camille glanced around, momentarily surprised, then shook off the weirdness.
"See you after dinner, then."
"See you,"
murmured Lissa, watching her walk away. When Camille was gone, Lissa reached up to tie her hair up in a ponytail. Her fingers couldn't quite get all the hair through, and suddenly, another pair of hands caught hold and helped her. She spun around and found herself staring into Christian's ice-blue eyes. She jerked away from him.
"Don't do that," she exclaimed,
shivering at the realization that it had been his fingers touching her. He gave her his lazy, slightly twisted smile and brushed a few pieces of unruly black hair out of his face.
"Are you asking me or ordering me?"
"Shut up."
She glanced around, both to avoid his eyes and make sure no one saw them together.
"What's the matter? Worried about what your slaves'll think if they see you talking to me?"
"They're my friends," she retorted.
"Oh, right. Of course they are. I mean, from what I saw, Camille would probably do anything for you, right? Friends till the end."
He crossed his arms over his chest, and in spite of her anger, she couldn't help but notice how the silvery gray of his shirt set off his black hair and blue eyes.
"At least she isn't like you. She doesn't pretend to be my friend one day and then ignore me for no reason."
An uncertain look flickered across his features. Tension and anger had built up between them in the last week, ever since I'd yelled at Christian after the royal reception. Believing what I'd told him, Christian had stopped talking to her and had treated her rudely every time she tried to start a conversation. Now, hurt and confused, she'd given up attempts at being nice. The situation just kept getting worse and worse. Looking out through Lissa's eyes, I could see that he still cared about her and still wanted her. His pride had been hurt, however, and he wasn't about to show weakness.
"Yeah," he said in a low, cruel voice. "I thought that was the way all royals were supposed to act. You certainly seem to be doing a good job with it. Or maybe you're just using compulsion on me to make me think you're a two-faced bitch. Maybe you really aren't, but I doubt it."
Lissa flushed at the word compulsion and cast another worried look around, but decided not to give him the satisfaction of arguing any more. She simply gave him one last glare before storming off to join a group of royals huddled over an assignment. Returning to myself, I stared blankly around the classroom, processing what I'd seen. Some tiny, tiny part of me was starting to feel sorry for Christian. It was only a tiny part, though, and very easy to ignore. At the beginning of the next day, I headed out to meet Dimitri. These practices were my favorite part of the day now, partly because of my stupid crush on him, and partly because I didn't have to be around the others. He and I started with running, as usual, and he ran with me, quiet and almost gentle in his instructions, probably worried about causing some sort of breakdown. He knew about the rumors somehow, but he never mentioned them. When we finished, he led me through an offensive exercise where I could use any makeshift weapons I could find to attack him. To my surprise, I managed to land a few blows on him, although they seemed to do me more damage than him. The impacts always made me stagger back, but he never budged. It still didn't stop me from attacking and attacking, fighting with an almost blind rage. I didn't know who I really fought in those moments,
Mia, or Jesse, or Ralph. Maybe all of them. Dimitri finally called a break. We carried the equipment we'd used on the field and returned everything to the supply room. While putting it away, he glanced at me and did a double take.
Your hands.
He swore in Russian. I could recognize it by now, but he refused to teach me what any of it meant.
Where are your gloves?
I looked down at my hands. They'd suffered for weeks, and today had only made them worse. The cold had turned the skin raw and chapped, and some parts were actually bleeding a little. My blisters swelled. Don't have any. Never needed them in Portland. He swore again and beckoned me to a chair while he retrieved a first aid kit. Wiping away the blood with a wet cloth, he told me gruffly,
"We'll get you some."
I looked down at my destroyed hands as he worked. This is only the start, isn't it?
Of what?
Me. Turning into Alberta. Her and all the other female guardians, they're all leathery and stuff. Fighting and training and always being outdoors. They aren't pretty anymore. I paused. This life? It destroys them. Their looks, I mean. He hesitated for a moment and looked up from my hands. Those warm brown eyes surveyed me, and something tightened in my chest. Damn it! I had to stop feeling this way around him.
It won't happen to you. You're too.
He groped for the right word, and I mentally substituted all sorts of possibilities. Goddess-like? Scorchingly sexy? Giving up, he simply said,
"It won't happen to you."
He turned his attention back to my hands. Did he think I was pretty? I never doubted the reaction I caused among guys my own age, but with him, I didn't know. The tightening in my chest increased. It happened to my mom. She used to be beautiful. I guess she still is, sort of, but not the way she used to be. Bitterly, I added, "Haven't seen her in a while. She could look completely different for all I know."
"You don't like your mother,"
he observed. "You noticed that, huh?"
"You barely know her."
"That's the point. She abandoned me. She left me to be raised by the academy." When he finished cleaning my open wounds, he found a jar of salve and began rubbing it into the rough parts of my skin. I sort of got lost in the feel of his hands massaging mine.
"You say that. But what else should she have done? I know you want to be a guardian. I know how much it means to you. Do you think she feels any differently? Do you think she should have quit to raise you when you'd spend most of your life here anyway?"
I didn't like having reasonable arguments thrown at me. "Are you saying I'm a hypocrite?"
"I'm just saying maybe you shouldn't be so hard on her. She's a very respected vampire woman. She set you on the path to be the same."
"It wouldn't kill her to visit more," I muttered. "But I guess you're right, a little. It could have been worse, I suppose. I could have been raised with blood whores." Dimitri looked up.
"I was raised in a vampire commune. They aren't as bad as you think."
"Oh!" I suddenly felt stupid. "I didn't mean..."
"It's all right."
He focused his attention back on my hands. "So, did you, like, have family there? Grow up with them?" He nodded.
"My mother and two sisters. I didn't see them much after I went to school, but we still keep in touch. Mostly, the communities are about family. There's a lot of love there, no matter what stories you've heard."
My bitterness returned, and I glanced down to hide my glare. Dimitri had had a happier family life with his disgraced mother and relatives than I'd had with my respected guardian mother. He most certainly knew his mother better than I knew mine. "Yeah, but isn't it weird? Aren't there a lot of Moroi men visiting to, you know?" His hands rubbed circles into mine.
"Sometimes."
There was something dangerous in his tone, something that told me this was an unwelcome topic. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring up something bad."
"Actually, you probably wouldn't think it's bad,"
he said after almost a minute had passed. A tight smile formed on his lips.
You don't know your father, do you?
I shook my head. No. All I know is he must have had wicked cool hair. Dimitri glanced up and his eyes swept me.
Yes, he must have.
Returning to my hands, he said carefully,
I knew mine.
I froze.
Really?
Most Moroi guys don't stay. Well, I mean, some do, but, you know, usually they just...
Well, he liked my mother.
He didn't say liked in a nice way.
And he visited her a lot. He's my sister's father, too. But when he came, well, he didn't treat my mother very well. He did some horrible things.
Like, I hesitated. This was Dimitri's mother we were talking about. I didn't know how far I could go. Blood whore things?
Like beating her up kinds of things, he replied flatly.
He'd finished the bandages but was still holding my hands. I don't even know if he noticed. I certainly did. His were warm and large, with long and graceful fingers. Fingers that might have played the piano in another life. Oh, God, I said. How horrible. I tightened my hands in his. He squeezed back. That's horrible. And she just let it happen?
She did.
The corner of his mouth turned up into a sly, sad smile.
But I didn't.
Excitement surged through me. Tell me.
Tell me you beat the crap out of him.
His smile grew.
I did.
Wow. I hadn't thought Dimitri could be any cooler, but I was wrong. You beat up your dad. I mean, that's really horrible what happened, but wow. You really are a god. He blinked.
What?
Oh, nothing. Hastily, I tried to change the subject. How old were you? He still seemed to be puzzling out the god comment.
13.
Whoa. Definitely a god. You beat up your dad when you were 13?
It wasn't that hard. I was stronger than he was, almost as tall. I couldn't let him keep doing that. He had to learn that being royal and Moroi doesn't mean you can do anything you want to other people, even blood whores.
I stared. I couldn't believe he'd just said that about his mother. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Pieces clicked into place for me. That's why you got so upset about Jesse, isn't it? He was another royal trying to take advantage of a vampire girl. Dimitri averted his eyes.
I got upset over that for a lot of reasons. After all, you were breaking the rules and...
He didn't finish, but he looked back into my eyes in a way that made warmth build between us. Thinking about Jesse soon darkened my mood, unfortunately. I looked down. I know you heard what people are saying, that I...
I know it's not true,
he interrupted. His immediate, certain answer surprised me, and I stupidly found myself questioning it. Yeah, but how do you...
Because I know you,
he replied firmly.
I know your character. I know you're going to be a great guardian.
His confidence made that warm feeling return. I'm glad someone does. Everyone else thinks I'm totally irresponsible.
With the way you worry more about Lyssa than yourself.
He shook his head.
No. You understand your responsibilities better than guardians twice your age. You'll do what you have to do to succeed.
I thought about that. I don't know if I can do everything I have to do. He did that cool one-eyebrow thing. I don't want to cut my hair, I explained. He looked puzzled.
You don't have to cut your hair. It's not required.
All the other guardian women do. They show off their tattoos. Unexpectedly, he released my hands and leaned forward. Slowly, he reached out and held a lock of my hair, twisting it around one finger thoughtfully. I froze, and for a moment there was nothing going on in the world except him touching my hair. He let my hair go, looking a little surprised and embarrassed at what he'd done.
Don't cut it,
he said gruffly. Somehow I remembered how to talk again. But no one will see my tattoos if I don't. He moved toward the doorway, a small smile playing over his lips.
Wear it up.
Chapter 14. I continued spying on Lyssa over the next couple of days, feeling mildly guilty each time. She'd always hated it when I did by accident, and now I did it on purpose. Steadily, I watched as she reintegrated herself into the royal power players one by one. She couldn't do group compulsion, but catching one person alone was just as effective, if slower. And really, a lot didn't need to be compelled to start hanging out with her again. Many weren't as shallow as they seemed. They remembered Lyssa and liked her for who she was. They flocked to her. And now, a month and a half after our return to the academy, it was like she'd never left at all. And during this rise to fame, she advocated for me and rallied against Mia and Jesse. One morning, I tuned into her while she was getting ready for breakfast. She'd spent the last 20 minutes blow-drying and straightening her hair, something she hadn't done in a while. Natalie, sitting on the bed in their room, watched the process with curiosity. When Lyssa moved on to makeup, Natalie finally spoke up.
"Hey, we're going to watch a movie in Aaron's room after school. You going to come?"
I'd always made jokes about Natalie being boring, but her friend Aaron had the personality of drywall.
"Can't. I'm going to help Camille bleach Carly's hair. You sure spend a lot of time with them now."
"Yeah, I guess." Lyssa dabbed mascara across her lashes, instantly making her eyes look bigger.
"I thought you didn't like them anymore."
"I changed my mind."
"They sure seem to like you a lot now. I mean, not that anyone wouldn't like you, but once you came back and didn't talk to them, they seemed okay ignoring you, too. I heard them talking about you a lot. I guess that's not surprising because they're Mia's friends, too. But isn't it weird how much they like you now? Like, I hear them always waiting to see what you want to do before they make plans and stuff. And a bunch of them are defending Rose now, which is really crazy. Not that I believe any of that stuff about her, but I never would have thought it was possible."
Underneath Natalie's rambling was the seed of suspicion, and Lyssa picked up on it. Natalie probably never would have dreamed of compulsion, but Lyssa couldn't risk innocent questions turning into something more.
"You know what?" she interrupted. "Maybe I will swing by Aaron's after all. I bet Carly's hair won't take that long."
The offer derailed Natalie's train of thought.
"Really? Oh, wow, that would be great. She was telling me how sad she was that you're not around as much anymore, and I told her..."
On it went. Lyssa continued her compulsion and returned to popularity. I watched it all quietly, always worrying, even though her efforts were starting to reduce the stares and gossip about me.
"This is going to backfire,"
I whispered to her in church one day. "Someone's going to start wondering and asking questions."
"Stop being so melodramatic. Power shifts all the time around here."
"Not like this."
"You don't think my winning personality could do this on its own?"
"Of course I do, but if Christian spotted it right away, then someone else will..." My words were interrupted when two guys farther down the pew suddenly exploded into snickers. Glancing up, I saw them looking right at me, not even bothering to hide their smirks. Looking away, I tried to ignore them, suddenly hoping the priest would start up soon. But Lyssa returned their looks, and a sudden fierceness flashed across her face. She didn't say a word, but their smiles grew smaller under her heavy gaze.
"Tell her you're sorry," she told them, "and make sure she believes it."
A moment later, they practically fell all over themselves apologizing to me and begging for forgiveness. I couldn't believe it. She'd used compulsion in public, in church of all places, and on two people at the same time. They finally exhausted their supply of apologies, but Lyssa wasn't finished.
"That's the best you can do?" she snapped.
Their eyes widened in alarm, both terrified that they'd angered her.
"Lyss,"
I said quickly, touching her arm. "It's okay, I accept their apologies."
Her face still radiated disapproval, but she finally nodded. The guys slumped in relief. Yikes! I'd never felt so relieved to have a service start. Through the bond, I felt a sort of dark satisfaction coming from Lissa. It was uncharacteristic for her, and I didn't like it. Needing to distract myself from her troubling behavior, I studied other people as I so often did. Nearby, Christian openly watched Lissa, a troubled look on his face. When he saw me, he scowled and turned away. Dimitri sat in the back as usual, for once not scanning every corner for danger. His attention was turned inward, his expression almost pained. I still didn't know why he came to church. He always seemed to be wrestling with something. In the front, the priest was talking about St. Vladimir again.
His spirit was strong, and he was truly gifted by God. When he touched them, the crippled walked, and the blind could see. Where he walked, flowers bloomed.
Man, the Moroi needed to get more saints. Healing cripples and blind people? I'd forgotten all about St. Vladimir. Mason had mentioned Vladimir bringing people back from the dead, and it had reminded me of Lissa at the time. Then other things had distracted me. I hadn't thought about the saint or his shadow-kissed guardian and their bond in a while. How could I have overlooked this? Ms. Karp, I realized, wasn't the only other Moroi who could heal like Lissa. Vladimir could, too.
And all the while the masses gathered to him, loving him, eager to follow his teachings and hear him preach the word of God.
Turning, I stared at Lissa. She gave me a puzzled look.
What?
I didn't get a chance to elaborate. I don't even know if I could have formed the words, because I was whisked back to my prison almost as soon as I stood up at the end of the service. Back in my room, I went online to research St. Vladimir, but turned up nothing useful. Damn it. Mason had skimmed the books in the library and said there was little there. What did that leave me with? I had no way of learning more about that dusty old saint. Or did I? What had Christian said that first day with Lissa? Over there, we have an old box full of the writings of the blessed and crazy St. Vladimir. The storage room above the chapel. It had the writings. Christian had pointed them out. I needed to look at them, but how? I couldn't ask the priest. How would he react if he found out students were going up there? It had put an end to Christian's lair. But maybe Christian himself could help. It was Sunday, though, and I wouldn't see him until tomorrow afternoon. Even then, I didn't know if I'd get a chance to talk to him alone. While heading out to practice later, I stopped in the dorm's kitchen to grab a granola bar. As I did, I passed a couple of novice guys, Miles and Anthony. Miles whistled when he saw me.
How's it been going, Rose? You getting lonely? Want some company?
Anthony laughed.
I can't bite you, but I can give you something else you want.
I had to pass through the doorway they stood in to get outside. Glaring, I pushed past, but Miles caught me around the waist, his hand sliding down to my butt.
Get your hands off my ass before I break your face, I told him, jerking away.
In doing so, I only bumped into Anthony.
Come on, Anthony said. I thought you didn't have a problem taking on two guys at the same time.
A new voice spoke up.
If you guys don't walk away right now, I'll take both of you on.
Mason, my hero.
You're so full of it, Ashford, said Miles.
He was the bigger of the two and let me go to square off with Mason. Anthony backed off from me, more interested in whether or not there'd be a fight. There was so much testosterone in the air I felt like I needed a gas mask.
Are you doing her too? Miles asked Mason. You don't want to share?
Say one more word about her and I'll rip your head off.
Why? She's just a cheap blood...
Mason punched him. It didn't rip Miles's head off or even cause anything to break or bleed, but it looked like it hurt. His eyes widened, and he lunged toward Mason. The sound of doors opening in the hall caused everyone to freeze. Novices got in a lot of trouble for fighting.
Probably some guardians coming, Mason grinned. You want them to know you are beating up on a girl? Miles and Anthony exchanged glances.
Come on, Anthony said. Let's go. We don't have time for this.
Miles reluctantly followed.
I'll find you later, Ashford.
When they were gone, I turned to Mason. Beat up on a girl?
You're welcome, he said dryly.
I didn't need your help.
Sure, you were doing just fine on your own.
They caught me off guard, that's all. I could have dealt with them eventually.
Look, don't take being pissed off at them out on me.
I just don't like being treated like a girl.
You are a girl, and I was just trying to help.
I looked at him and saw the earnestness on his face. He meant well. No point in being a bitch to him when I had so many other people to hate lately. Well, thanks. Sorry I snapped at you. We talked a little bit, and I managed to get him to spill some more school gossip. He had noticed Lissa's rise in status, but didn't seem to find it strange. As I talked to him, I noticed the adoring look he always got around me spread across his face. It made me sad to have him feel that way about me. Guilty, even. How hard would it be, I wondered, to go out with him? He was nice, funny, and reasonably good-looking. We got along. Why did I get caught up in so many messes with other guys when I had a perfectly sweet one here who wanted me? Why couldn't I just return his feelings? The answer came to me before I'd even finished asking myself the question. I couldn't be Mason's girlfriend because when I imagined someone holding me and whispering dirty things in my ear, he had a Russian accent. Mason continued watching me admiringly, oblivious to what was going on in my head. And seeing that adoration, I suddenly realized how I could use it to my advantage. Feeling a little guilty, I shifted my conversation to a more flirty style and watched Mason's glow increase. I leaned beside him on the wall so our arms just touched and gave him a lazy smile. You know, I still don't approve of your whole hero thing, but you did scare them. That was almost worth it.
But you don't approve?
I trailed fingers up his arm. No, I mean, it's hot in principle, but not in practice. He laughed.
The hell it isn't.
He caught hold of my hand and gave me a knowing look.
Sometimes you need to be saved. I think you like being saved sometimes and just can't admit it.
And I think you get off on saving people and just can't admit it.
I don't think you know what gets me off. Saving damsels like you is just the honorable thing to do, he declared loftily.
I repressed the urge to smack him over the use of damsels. Then prove it. Do me a favor just because it's the right thing to do.
Sure, he said immediately. Name it.
I need you to get a message to Christian Ozera. His eagerness faltered.
What the? You aren't serious.
Yes, completely.
Rose, I can't talk to him, you know that.
I thought you said you'd help. I thought you said helping damsels is the honorable thing to do.
I don't really see how honor is involved here.
I gave him the most smoldering look I could manage. He caved.
What do you want me to tell him?
Tell him I need St. Vladimir's books, the ones in storage. He needs to sneak them to me soon. Tell him it's for Lissa, and tell him I lied the night of the reception. I hesitated. Tell him I'm sorry.
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't have to. Just do it, please. I turned on the beauty queen smile again. With hasty assurances that he'd see what he could do, he left for lunch, and I went off to practice. Chapter 15. Mason delivered. He found me the next day before school. He was carrying a box of books.
I got them, he said. Hurry and take them before you get in trouble for talking to me.
He handed them over and I grunted. They were heavy. Christian gave you these?
Yeah. Managed to talk to him without anyone noticing. He's kind of got an attitude. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah, I noticed. I rewarded Mason with a smile that he ate up. Thanks, this means a lot. I hauled the loot up to my room,
fully aware of how weird it was that someone who hated to study as much as I did was about to get buried in dusty crap from the 14th century. When I opened the first book, though, I saw that these must be reprints of reprints of reprints, probably, because anything that old would have long since fallen apart. Sifting through the books, I discovered they fell into three categories. Books written by people after St. Vladimir had died, books written by other people when he was still alive, and one diary of sorts written by him. What had Mason said about primary and secondary sources? Those last two groups were the ones I wanted. Whoever had reprinted these had reworded the books enough so that I didn't have to read Ye Old English or anything. Or rather, Russian, I supposed. St. Vladimir had lived in the old country. Today I healed the mother of Sava, who has long since suffered from sharp pains within her stomach. Her malady is now gone, but God has not allowed me to do such a thing lightly. I am weak and dizzy, and the madness is trying to leak into my head. I thank God every day for shadow-kissed Anna, for without her, I would surely not be able to endure. Anna again. And shadow-kissed. He talked about her a lot, among other things. Most of the time, he wrote long sermons just like what I'd hear in church. Super boring. But other times, the book read just like a diary, recapping what he did each day. And if it really wasn't just a load of crap, he healed all the time. Sick people, injured people, even plants. He brought dead crops back to life when people were starving. Sometimes he would make flowers bloom just for the hell of it. Reading on, I found out that it was a good thing old Vlad had Anna around, because he was pretty messed up. The more he used his powers, the more they started to get to him. He'd get irrationally angry and sad. He'd blame it on demons and stupid stuff like that. But it was obvious he suffered from depression. Once, he admitted in his diary, he tried to kill himself. Anna stopped him. Later, browsing through the book written by the guy who knew Vladimir, I read, "And many think it's miraculous, too, the power the blessed Vladimir shows over others. Moroi and Dampires flock to him and listen to his words, happy just to be near him. Some say it is madness that touches him and not spirit. But most adore him and would do anything he asked. Such is the way God marks his favorites. And if such moments are followed by hallucinations and despair, it is a small sacrifice for the amount of good and leadership he can show among the people." It sounded a lot like what the priest had said, but I sensed more than just a winning personality. People adored him, would do anything he asked. Yes, Vladimir had used compulsion on his followers, I was certain. A lot of Moroi had in those days, before it was banned. But they didn't use it on Moroi, or Dampires. They couldn't. Only Lyssa could. I shut the book and leaned back against my bed. Vladimir healed plants and animals. He could use compulsion on a massive scale. And by all accounts, using those sorts of powers made him crazy and depressed. Adding into it all, making it that much weirder, was that everyone kept describing his guardian as shadow-kissed. That expression had bugged me ever since I first heard it.
"You're shadow-kissed. You have to take care of her."
Ms. Karp had shouted those words at me, her hands clenching my shirt and jerking me toward her. It had happened on a night 2 years ago when I'd been inside the main part of the upper school to return a book. It was nearly past curfew, and the halls were empty. I'd heard a loud commotion, and then Ms. Karp had come tearing around the corner, looking frantic and wild-eyed. She shoved me into a wall, still gripping me.
"Do you understand?"
I knew enough self-defense that I could have probably pushed her away, but my shock kept me frozen. "No."
"They're coming for me. They'll come for her."
"Who?"
"Lyssa."
"You have to protect her. The more she uses it, the worse it'll get. Stop her, Rose. Stop her before they notice. Before they notice and take her away, too. Get her out of here."
What do you mean? Get her out of